This episode is on more of a personal note. We talked with one of my counselors when I was bishop, who's now no longer a member of the church.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
This is the Leading LDS Podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum. I'm your host. And one thing you may not know about me is I was the priesthood chorister for 6 years during my youth years. But I digress. If you're new to Leading LDS, I welcome you. This is a podcast, but we also have an online resource. That's where it started. It started as a blog and has grown from there to a vast machine with many leadership resources thereupon. So you can go to leadinglds.org to find other articles that may be related to your leadership calling that would hopefully help you enhance your leadership, because that's what we're trying to do at Leading LDS, is enhance the leadership ability in the context of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You know, one thing I hear on other podcasts I probably should mention more often is that we are not endorsed nor sustained nor funded nor any part of the official Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but nor have they told me to stop. So we strive to be a faith-promoting podcast and resource within the context of the church. And we hope that faithful members are gaining from the leadership perspectives that we are offering here at Leading LDS. And our hope is that across the board, the church is becoming a church full of better leaders, more able leaders, and leaders that are making a difference in building the kingdom of God. Now, this episode is quite a personal episode for me. And so I encourage you to buckle up, listen closely. This is me interviewing a dear friend who has recently left the church, and I won't regurgitate the introduction that we do during the episode, but it's definitely a different type of episode that I generally do on Leading LDS, but I feel like it articulates a crucial part of leadership, and that is relationships between leaders and those that doubt in the church and how we can help them stay. So here is my interview with Heath Becker. This is Heath Becker. How are you, Heath?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Kurt.
Yeah, well, Heath and I go, I don't know if I'd say way back, but in the world of the Lee Ward, we go back. I consider Heath a great friend, and he was my last second counselor when I served as bishop. He was one of my counselors when I was released. And this episode, I'm sort of just wrestling with where to start with it a little bit, but I would say, man, I mean, we'll just stick with the facts. So yeah. Heath was my second counselor, and you are no longer a member of the church.
Yeah, that's right.
And it isn't because you were excommunicated.
No.
But it was, you can tell I'm just nervous laughing here. You had your name removed from the records of the church.
Yeah, right? In June of this year.
2016.
Yeah, 2016. My wife and I and our three kids, we resigned from the church.
And we're going to get into that a little bit. And I first want to make some clarifications up front. Is one, this wasn't necessarily my idea, though I maybe provoked it a little bit. You know, I didn't go to your house and say, hey, you want to talk about, let's have an interview about your experience leaving the church and these things. But obviously there's a friendship there. And so it's not like because your relationship with the church ended that, our relationship ended, and we weren't just friends on a bishopry level. I mean, our families have gone to Disneyland before with other families that we served with in our ward, and we live practically next door to each other. We see each other. Our kids are similar ages, so it's definitely not just hey, we are in the same calling, and you seem like a nice guy. I mean, it definitely goes deeper than that. It wasn't my request, but we've been talking, and you've been helping the Leading LDS world quite a bit that people don't know about. Is you've been helping us establish this, file all of our nonprofit 501c3 paperwork, right?
Yeah, I'm an attorney, and I started a nonprofit this year, and So I'm kind of helping you with the leading LDS nonprofit paperwork.
Yeah. And you've been a lifesaver. You know, I had another attorney that was helping me. He got busy, you know, no fault to him. He was helping me as much as he could. And I was in need of knowing what to do to just get this filed so that we could be recognized as a nonprofit. And I know that you've recently set up your law firm as a nonprofit, immigration law firm. And so you were more than happy to show me through this or walk me through this and help me figure out how to do it. And we're getting close to getting all that paperwork filed. And so I can't thank you enough for doing that. But during that process, you know, we've gone to lunch a lot together and just talked some things through about your experience. And so, and I think you listen to various podcasts and we were talking about your experience. And I think at one point you said, hey, you can interview me sort of jokingly. And I said, hey man, I would totally love that because the conversations we have are so insightful, especially for me. I think you've benefited from them and just, you know, it's two friends talking. So.
Yeah. You know, and I thought this might be a good idea too, because, you know, we left the church about 3 months ago. We stopped going to church, you know, a few months before that. And it's just, you know, we've been completely open about it with like family and friends and stuff. And, you know, we haven't tried to hide anything and it's just, but nobody wants to like talk to us about it, you know, like,
yeah. So, it's like the big elephant in the room and it's like, hey, like, let's talk about anything but that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess, you know, maybe like we had the expectation that maybe some people would maybe like ask us about it, you know, or want to know like why or, you know, like what's going on or, you know, but really like, it's like, okay, you resigned. Okay. You know, and
yeah.
It's just, there's been a few like, you know, very short conversations about it, but that, you know, like nothing, like, so I thought maybe this might be a good way, you know, to talk about it and then maybe like a way for like people that know me and my wife and our kids, like they could hear the story without having to, you know, it's an awkward conversation and it's something difficult to talk
and
about.
And I'm the lucky one that gets to have it. This is great, Heath. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. And another point I want to make before we really dig into this is this isn't meant to be like a recorded counseling session. I'm not trying to counsel you. You're not necessarily trying to counsel me. We're not trying to fix anything. Yeah. We're not hoping by the end of this that we change one another's minds. And I think the one unique thing about this is that you're not, at least I haven't felt a whole that much, if any, of bitterness from you as far as towards the church. You know, you're not like some people leave the church and be like, all right, let's go burn it down type thing. You know, like what they're doing is horrible. And I've never felt that, you know, and I think that goes into, and we'll get into the story of that. But so one, this isn't something I'm just chasing people down who have resigned from the church and trying to interview them. One, we're friends. Two, I've gained so much from our conversations. I've learned so much about myself as a leader. So if anything, this is not necessarily an analysis of you and your situation, but analysis of my situation as a leader. Obviously, Leading LDS being a leadership podcast, I hope that individuals that listen to this are obviously mainly leaders and that they walk away from this thinking, I wonder if there's somebody like Heath in my ward and how can I reach out to them and help them? And the thing is, as I think about this, is I don't necessarily feel like I'm a horrible leader. And again, it's not my fault. You know, it's not that I should have done this and, you know, you would have never left or I should have done that and I could have, you know, sent you a different direction. But nonetheless, I learn things as far as how I perceive individuals in my ward, what they're struggling with and so forth. But so let's just go back and maybe build some context around your story, because you have sort of a unique story as it is. You weren't raised in the traditional Mormon family. Maybe give us in 5 minutes kind of that background of your upbringing.
Yeah, I mean, my family our LDS, you know, going back a long ways. Well, at least, you know, on my mom's side, but I was raised like kind of half time with my mom, half time with my grandparents. I spent 8 years with my grandparents. And they were LDS.
And this was in Missouri, right?
Yeah. I grew up in Missouri. My mom, like pretty much the entire time I was growing up, like, I think she was, you know, she didn't go to church. She started going to church when I was on my mission. But my grandparents were pretty active. And me personally, I started going to church, you know, consistently on a regular basis when I was a junior in high school. I was living with my grandparents and, you know, like, I started dating a LDS girl and I started going to church and then I started going to early morning seminary and, hanging out with the missionaries a lot. And, you know, it was a great support network and great friends and, you know, then it made me want to serve a mission and I served a mission after high school and I went to Ecuador.
And obviously learned Spanish, and that Spanish has blessed you in your career as an immigration attorney. You use it every day.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, exactly. So, you know, Mormonism has definitely, you know, shaped my life and who I am and my family. And I went to undergrad at BYU Idaho, and I went to law school at BYU Law School.
You know, as you were serving as my counselor, near the end of being released, it sort of, we had some conversations that sort of brought this to the surface that you had been, you'd been struggling for a while as far as, you know, the testimony goes. And I'm going to use all the cliches that maybe don't, you know, I don't mean to put you in a certain box or whatever, but, you know, there are some concerns with the history of the church. Would you say that categorizes it well, broadly enough? And that started in law school, right?
Well, you know, really it started when I was an undergrad, about like 10 years ago, I think, like around 2006. My father-in-law gave me the book Rough Stone Rolling. And, you know, I read probably more than half of it, and I just like closed it, and I had to like not look at it anymore because it was just bringing up so many things that it wasn't the narrative, you know, that I knew about church history. But then, you know, like I kind of, you know, they say the shelf. So I kind of just put it on the shelf. But then in law school, I took a class, since I went to BYU Law School, there was a class on Joseph Smith and the law and kind of like, his legal battles, with like the Kirtland Safety Society and, some things touching on like, polygamy and some other things. So I took a whole class on Joseph Smith and, you know, lawsuits, trials, you know, it all kind of related back to the law, but yeah, there was some things that like were discussed in that class that I just had never heard before. And to me were shocking. And so those were other things that I kind of, you know, put on the shelf and tried not to think about.
Yeah. And those listening that may not be familiar with Rough Stone Rolling, it is a biography about Joseph Smith written by Richard Bushman, who's probably the scholar on Joseph Smith. And he's a patriarch. This isn't like some outlier third party book that is written by somebody bitter towards the church. This is a historic book that is very historic. And so you do go into some of those details of Joseph Smith that, you know, weren't taught in primary or young women's.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's written by, like an active, faithful, believing member of the church. So it's not like anti-Mormon literature.
Yeah. And so it's not that you got, you know, engulfed in this literature that just wasn't seeing things right or they were twisting the truth. You know, it's a strong historic book that, you know, that I would have no hesitation recommending to individuals. And I think, I'm sure a lot of listeners have read it and found it, you know, there's a faith promoting as, you know, helping you reanalyze your faith as well, as far as how you built your faith and your testimony.
Yeah. Other people that have read it have told me like, oh, you know, that strengthened their testimony. Mm-hmm. But for me, it didn't, you know.
And would you say that was sort of the beginning of sort of these questions and reanalyzing your testimony?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, before I read that book, I don't think I'd ever doubted ever, you know, about Joseph Smith or the church or, you know, the church leaders.
Yeah. So you go through that class and then you graduate law school.
December 2011. Yeah.
Okay. This in 2011. And at this point, you were married before law school, right?
Yeah. I got married in 2004.
Okay. And so you graduate law school, then you go off and start your career in law. And after that point, I mean, it's not like you put it on the shelf at that point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it never crossed my mind, you know, like stop going to church or anything. It was kind of one of those things where it's like, well, I guess we'll find out, you know, after this life, what those answers are.
So from there, you sort of, it's on the shelf. And then when did that shelf start to break down? When was the next time you really had to reanalyze and take a hard look at things again?
So, you know, after law school, I got a job in Salt Lake City, at a nonprofit, as an immigration attorney. And I moved into the Lee Ward. And, you know, after, I don't know, like maybe a year or so or whatever, I was called as the Elders Quorum president.
Yeah.
You know, that, I guess that was, you know, as a leadership calling, you know, like,
and that was really your first official leadership calling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, like I'd taught in like Sunday school or like priesthood lessons and stuff before, but, not like a leader, you know? And so I felt like, yeah, you know, I just felt like, you know, like a leader needs to have a strong testimony, like they can't have doubts. And so like really it became my goal to like kind of extinguish all doubts, and just like have like a, I don't know how to describe it, just like a unbreakable testimony kind of thing, you know, like strengthen my testimony, like get rid of any lingering doubts or anything that I had in my mind. And so that was my mission, you know?
So it seemed like, is that call? And I remember when I submitted your name to the stake presidency to be the Elders Quorum president. So that for you, you sort of had to go back to the shelf and you had to say, if I'm going to be a leader in this church, I'm going to have to get rid of the shelf, right?
Yeah.
Whether that was right or wrong. And as we go through this, again, this isn't some, we're just telling the story, whether I'm right or wrong, whether you're right or wrong, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This is your story.
And I would say I don't claim to know any of the answers. You know, like I still don't know what the answers are.
Yeah. And this is what the part, and we'll maybe get to it, that was, as we talked after you resigned from the church, that really surprised me is it wasn't that you had now arrived to a determination. You now have the answers and it's not in the church. It's out of the church.
I don't know if we're like jumping too far ahead here, but really like the decision to resign was because maybe we need to talk more about the backstory, but like, you know, like, so I was Elders Quorum president, really trying to just like figure out, grow my testimony. So every prayer, every day became, you know, part of it is like, help me, to not doubt and help me to strengthen my testimony and to know without a doubt that the church is true. And it, you know, I never crossed my mind that the church wasn't true. It's just, I knew that I didn't have like this super, you know, like unwavering, no, without a shadow of a doubt testimony that I wanted to have, but I never thought like it wasn't true.
Yeah. Because in your mind, being a leader in the church, leaders in the church don't have that shelf.
Yeah.
It's, and if they do, it's empty.
Yeah.
Right. And so now I'm a leader in the church. And so I need to get rid of the shelf in order to be an effective leader.
Yeah. Right? And really, I mean, like when I got called into the bishopric as the second counselor, it was basically the same thing, but just intensified, you know, because like you gotta, on a regular basis, kind of like direct, sacrament meeting, you have to like bear your testimony in sacrament meeting,
yeah, during fast and testimony.
Yeah,
meeting, right?
Exactly. When you're conducting those meetings. And then like more than that, just like when you go to Sunday school or like, you know, you're attending like, the priesthood meeting or something, like people will look to you, you know, like when there's like questions in the class, like, oh, well, what do you think, Brother Becker? You know, you're a member of the bishopric, like you're supposed to know the answers. You're supposed to like, you know, like be a spiritual leader and have like real insightful things to say. And, I got to the point when I was in the bishop, and I wasn't in the bishopric for more than a year. I think like total, it was maybe,
I think it was about a year,
Okay. Yeah. But like, it just got increasingly where like, I didn't think the church wasn't true, but like, I got to the point where I couldn't say that I knew that Joseph Smith was a prophet. And I, you know.
And that, in your mind, that just didn't line up with how a leader is supposed to lead in the church.
Exactly. So like when I would like bear my testimony and it would only be Christ, I thought like, oh man, people are going to be like, you know, it was just like these unfounded fears. I think, you know, like people were going to think like, well, how, you know,
yeah,
that's a weak testimony. But like, it was just, I just couldn't say, you know, like that I believe Joseph Smith was a prophet.
Yeah. And this is such an interesting concept of church culture that comes up because, you know, we're coming upon a general conference and, you know, we're going to hear some incredible talks, some incredible testimonies. And man, you look at somebody like Elder Holland, you know, President Uchtdorf, and you just know, you know that they know, you know, they're not, yeah. Not once have I felt like, oh, come on, like you're kind of going overboard there or, you know, they always seem sincere.
Yeah.
And so, and we idolize these individuals,
yeah,
which we should, they're incredible leaders, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not idolize in the wrong fashion, but you know what I mean. And we want to be that leader that can stand and testify.
Yeah.
But sometimes if we create a culture that only leaders, that only effective leaders are the ones with the testimony that can do that, I think we're sort of hurting ourselves. We're making it very, we're making the tent even smaller.
Yeah. And I don't think like you were creating that culture, but like,
right.
As you're mentioning that, like I'm having this flashback to one of our bishopric meetings. And like you had played a clip and it was a great clip, like, you know, but it was Elder Holland giving a talk about, you know, testimony and how like we shouldn't have like a weak, you know, testimony, but it should be a testimony where people could like kind of like warm their hands by the fire of our testimony. I wanted that. Like I thought like I needed to have that. Like if I'm going to be a leader, like I need to have that testimony that Elder Holland was talking about. And I've told you this, but I fasted, you know, on a regular basis to increase my testimony, to know that Joseph Smith was a prophet. You know, I went to the temple. I prayed in the temple. You know, I read my scriptures. It became my quest, you know, to know. And part of that too was like the Book of Mormon, because they go hand in hand, you know, because if the Book of Mormon's true, you know, Joseph Smith must have been a prophet.
Yeah.
And so it was just a lot of prayer, to find out that was, you know, true.
And just to create some context for those that are listening, I want individuals to know that as I saw you serve, I mean, Heath is an incredible individual when it comes to just purely serving. And he's looking very uncomfortable right now as I say this, but the reality is like, I don't think you ever really enjoyed the administrative side of these callings, you know, like, okay, go collect the home teaching numbers, or you got to meet, but when it came to like visiting, like I think of, you know, Lance and the ward, and I would see you invite him over for dinner and things like that. Like I just always idolized that. And I always thought, you know, I want to be that type of saint that does that. And so one misconception that many individuals, and I think it only takes about a few months in leadership when you can get rid of this misconception, but it's individuals that have doubts. It's not about because they're sinning or they're doing something wrong, or they just really want to sin. And so these doubts are just sort of a smoke screen to that. I mean, and this, what breaks my heart is that, you know, you were really were striving to be better. You were fasting, you were going to the temple, and you were, you know, just craving that certainty. But for whatever reason, it didn't come in the way that you expected it to, or if it came at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. Like I look back on it and like, I mean, like, I don't know, like maybe God was trying to give me an answer and I just couldn't hear it, or I wouldn't hear it. I don't know. That's the thing. Like I just don't know, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and as we've had these conversations in your office and such, at one point you said that, you don't think you would have left if you weren't put in the bishopric. And I'm like, great, Heath, thanks for blaming it on me, you know? But, yeah. But what you mean by that is it just turned up the dial on that pressure to be that leader who could stand and say, I know, I know, I know.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
You know, during that time we served together, before you even let me know you were struggling with something, you seemed like there was a struggle going on.
Yeah.
And you're not, you aren't the type that necessarily is just going to open up and let these things pour out. And I think a lot of people are like that. But looking back, you know, with hindsight, it's more obvious that this was going on, that you were struggling with this.
Yeah.
So let's just kind of finish up the timeline here and we'll come back. And it came, basically, I was called to the stake presidency. So a release was coming. We called the first counselor as the new bishop.
Yeah.
I remember that, and this, would you say, near the end there, this was sort of the pinnacle of what you were going through, right?
Yeah. Well, and like right before, cause I mean, the bishopric got dissolved, like you said, because you got called into the stake presidency, but, probably just like a few weeks, before that. Yeah. Things just, I don't know. Do you want me to talk about it? I mean,
yeah, let's do it. I mean, if you're comfortable with it.
Yeah. I mean, like it was such a struggle with me. Like I wanted so bad just to like, you know, like that burning in the bosom, or, you know, however you want to describe it. Like, I just wanted so bad, like that, just like undeniable answer when you pray to know, you know, about the Book of Mormon or Joseph Smith. And I couldn't get it, you know? or I couldn't recognize it, or whatever the answer is. But I became like increasingly like just depressed, and just incredibly just, I don't know, just yeah, depressed is the word
and
for it.
How did that manifest itself? I mean, were you, you'd take days off work? Would you sleep in? What, I mean, what?
So, I mean, yeah, like I just, I mean, it was like, I was consumed by this, like, is this true or is this not true? You know, I was consumed with like getting the answer, and I couldn't get the answer. And is the problem me, you know, am I just not like good enough, or like, I don't know, but, it was hard. And the thing is, it's like, it was a Sunday, and this was just a few weeks, you know, before the, like they changed the bishopric, but, it was a Sunday. I had taken like a late nap, and I woke up from my nap, and like for the first time, like in my life, it's just like, I had thought like, it's not true, you know? And, it was just like, you'd have to understand like where I was at, and like the depression I was feeling, and like struggling so hard to get an answer. Like, I felt relieved. Like, I felt like this like incredible relief. You know, because like, well, if it's not true, then that kind of answers it, you know, like that's why there's all these things that don't make sense, you know, and that, I remember like I woke up from the nap, and I just had that thought. And I remember telling my wife, you know, like, yeah, I think the answer might be that it's not true. But then like, it's like that, like I felt relief for a little bit. Right. But it's like after, it wasn't long, but like the relief kind of like replaced itself with like thoughts that like, well, shoot, like if the church isn't true, like what's the point? And like, I think I told you like I would have, like I felt relieved to have an answer, you know, but then I thought like, well, if it's not true, there's no point. And so like that last the Sunday where they changed the bishopric, I just couldn't bring myself to go to church.
Yeah.
And it's like Rachel and I, my wife, you know, we tried to come up with like something to do that day, like an excuse to be out of town, but we stayed at home, and I just like stayed in bed, and we didn't go to church to be released. But it's just because I couldn't bring myself to stand, you know, in front of the Lord, and like, I don't know.
Yeah. And going on from my perspective, you know, I was there, and I remember sitting that Sacrament like, now where's Heath?
Yeah. You know, I didn't like, tell anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. And I knew, and at this point we'd have some of these conversations. I knew you were sort of going through this process, but
yeah.
I was just like, man, like he's my friend. Like I want him here. Like we've sort of been in the ditches together. We've been in this bishopric, and it's ending, and it's kind of a reflective meeting, you know, as they generally are, as those changes are happening. But now knowing what I know, because we would have had you stand with your wife and share your testimony, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I can understand going through that, why you wouldn't want to be there. So let's just pause for a minute here. And again, man, this is a tough episode, because it's a little personal for me, I guess. Yeah. But nonetheless, I've been so blessed from our interactions that I've got to share this. And so I don't want this to seem like, okay, I've brought this guy on the podcast, and he has received this answer that the church isn't true.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to make it sound that way either.
Right. And I want to just make sure people listening that's just what your experience, what you're going through. You were in such a race to get that confirmation,
yeah,
to gain that certitude, that when the thought, who I would claim where the thought would come from, may be different where you would claim the thought would come from, when that thought came across your mind of, well, maybe it just isn't true, and suddenly that stress lifts.
Yeah.
Nobody can blame you for entertaining that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you were depressed. You had been fasting. You'd been going to temple. You've been begging for this answer.
Yeah. Right?
And way back in primary, we've had those lessons of, okay, you just, you know, you read Moroni, then you pray, and the answer come. And absolutely, that has been that's a very simplified experience of what my experience has been. I have received that witness, yeah. And I am. I mean, I'm giving my life to this church through my service. I mean, the time, the things I've given, I really feel like I've received that. But my heart just breaks that when you're going through that, I wish, again, this isn't about what I could have done or couldn't have done, but I wish I could have done something, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if we'll discover through this interaction what that thing is. But again, this is this comes to the purpose of this interview. As leaders are listening, they need to stop and just ask themselves, do I have any Heaths in my ward? And what are you going to do about it? Right? Now, we had, and going back to when we were still serving, we had these interactions where you just said, you know, I'm struggling with this.
Yeah.
And we had some good discussions. And I validated what you're saying. I didn't say, oh, Heath, come on. You know, forget about it. I really tried to validate it. And to be honest, I walked away from those interactions feeling like, you know, Heath's okay. Yeah. You know, like he's struggling and that's cool. But I wasn't worried about you, you know. I thought you were sort of coming out of it.
And just to say something on what you said, like I've never claimed that like that thought that the church wasn't true. I've never claimed that that was revelation.
Yeah.
But the thought was there. It's the first time I'd ever thought it. And I did feel relief, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where I go back to. Nobody can blame you if in that moment that you entertained that idea and the stress went away.
Yeah.
To me, I look back and that was, how can I raise my kid to believe in these principles and understand the process of getting a testimony and without building that stress as they go through that process, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And as we interact with members, how can we interact with these members and encourage them towards testimony without building that stress?
Yeah. And as like, you know, about like, cause me and you, had, like you mentioned, we had talked, like I told you, you know, like, you know, that like I was struggling, you know, like with doubts and with my testimony. And I remember like you had made the comment, like not that you were going to release me, but that maybe like you should release me from the bishopric. Mm-hmm. And this was before, you know, like we knew you were going to get called into the stake presidency. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know that like, it's hard to know what I was thinking back then, but I mean, like you know, like I was probably trying to like act like maybe like things were more like better than they actually were. Hmm. I didn't want to be released. Like I didn't think I needed to be released.
I wasn't necessarily saying, well, maybe we should release you because, wow, we can't have somebody with doubts in the bishopric.
Yeah.
But more, I was just like, listen, you were starting your law practice at this time. You had a lot coming at you. You were sleeping in your office some nights. No,
yeah, that's right.
You were just very stressed there. So I kind of approached that like, Heath, like, listen, if we need to release you, it's not because you failed or I'm not going to be as disappointed in that. So
no, and you're absolutely right. And that's the way I remember it too. I mean, you were definitely, it was coming from a place of love and, you know, like, you know, we're friends and I did, that's the way I took it too. But like, I honestly thought like that I was just like, it was a struggle and there was a, you know, I was going to come out the other end with, you know, this perfect knowledge that it was all true. Like I really thought that.
Yeah. And you're in the struggle and the struggle is going to be worth it.
Yeah. Right. I guess.
Yeah. So let's kind of finish the story to bring us up to, cause this was a year ago that the change happened.
Yeah.
And, I remember, soon after we released, you met with the bishop and the new bishop and just said, listen, I'm out. Like not out, but I'm just going to step away from being involved in the church.
Like at that point. So when they called the new bishopric, at that point, like I'd completely like lost my testimony of Joseph Smith or, you know, the Book of Mormon and stuff. So, I think it, you know, my brother-in-law was getting married around that same time. And my temple recommend was expired. So, I renewed my temple recommend, you know, and I felt guilty for it because, I don't know. I think the question is like, you know, do you have a testimony of, which is very vague. So I think I kind of justify like, well, you know,
yeah, sure. All right.
Yeah. Like a testimony can go either way. Right.
Yeah. Cause you weren't, I mean,
I really wanted to like go to the wedding. Like I didn't want to like be excluded from my brother-in-law's wedding, you know, my, and so I ended up
And that family knew nothing of what you were going through.
Exactly. Like I hadn't shared anything with them or anybody about my doubts. And not going
to being, I mean,
yeah.
Like, oh, come on, man. You just let your temple recommend expire? Like, get the temple recommend so you can come to my wedding, right?
Exactly. You know, I ended up not going to the wedding anyways, but it's because, like, I had a client come to my office that had, like, a very urgent, like, case. And, you know, I slept in my office for, like, 3 days, like, and worked around the clock to do that case. And I missed my brother-in-law's wedding anyways. But then, like, right after the wedding, I came into the new bishop's office and you know, I gave him my temple recommend just because I felt like it would be dishonest for me to have it because I couldn't say I believed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what transpired from there, I think you really, your family wasn't really at church.
Yeah.
Very regular after that. What transpired between that and then the resignation?
You know, we stopped coming to church. I think we have a good mutual friend that was in the ward and it was like their last Sunday. And I think that was like the only time that we had gone to church in like the last, I don't know. I think that's the only time I've come to the Lee ward in like the last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like really, we stopped coming to church. You know, I started listening to a lot of podcasts, you know, that deal with like Mormon, LDS topics, you know. I really was searching for something that like kind of talked about all these issues with church history, but recognized that like maybe there were some problems there, you know, and kind of validated it. I think that if I would have like found something like that like early on, I don't know, it's hard to know like what I would have done, but I mean, I think I've come to like a place like where I'm at currently where like I feel like I could start going to church again, but like my testimony is just, I don't know that it'll, you know, be what it was before. I don't know. I don't know if any of this makes sense, but.
Sure. Actually, the bishop that replaced me, he was only in for 6 months and had to move and because of family situations. And then a new bishop was called. And I remember coming to church one Sunday and the bishop mentioning to me that they had gotten the resignation letters from your family. And I was like blown away, like, to be honest, it completely broke my heart.
Yeah,
because I served with you so long. I knew your family, and it's like, well, you know, it's fine that they separate, but I don't, you know, I hope they don't feel like they have to resign. Like, and it almost made me thought, man, maybe they're more bitter than I thought, you know.
Yeah,
and you've mentioned that you just found that letter that's online and it says all the right legal things and sent it in, and that letter sounds pretty bitter. Like if anybody read it, you'd be like, man, what's this guy's problem?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I told you like there's a website and I kind of told you like, it's almost as easy as buying something on Amazon where, oops, I didn't mean to take it that far, but the thing is, it's like the decision. So like to resign, like it's just, there's a website. It's just like, you don't have to write up anything. I mean, it's just,
you hit print and then fill your names in.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just putting your name on a form letter that gets sent to the church from this website. So, I mean, it only takes a couple minutes and then it's done. Right. And so, and it was kind of, I guess, like a rash decision. But, you know, I just, the thing is like with me, it's like I've always kind of been like all or nothing, you know, like no half efforts. And it's, I wasn't going to church and I didn't want to be, you know, like a Jack Mormon or, you know, if I was going to have a religion, I didn't want to like half live it, you know? And plus like I had this thought, you know, like, well, this doesn't mean this is like forever. It just means that, you know, this is where I'm at right now. Like, you know, as far as resigning, cause you know, and plus like, I don't want to pretend to be somebody that I'm not. And I, you know, I get asked like at work, you know, like if I'm LDS, you know, we live in Salt Lake, you know, it's Utah. Right. So it's a common question, you know, oh, are you LDS? So for those months, like that we weren't going to church and like that I, you know, stopped believing in Joe Smith and the Book of Mormon. Like I just, it was so hard to answer that question. Cause I felt like if I said yes, I was being like not honest, but like what other answer was there? And so part of me thought it would just make it be easier because then I could just truthfully tell people like, no, I'm not LDS, you know, but like, honestly, like it hasn't gotten any easier. Like it's still, it's still like, you know, probably even just more awkward. Yeah. And I don't know, probably like maybe once a week, like I just like, man, like maybe a little bit regret resigning and think like it was, I don't know, you know, like, was that the right thing to do?
Yeah. So where, how would you describe where are you at right now with it all? I mean, emotionally, with your perspective on it all.
So, I mean, here's the good part. Like, I feel like I'm happier than I've been in like a really long time. And it's not just like, you know, and it's not just like the ups and downs and I'm just on an up, you know, like I really feel like overall, you know, like I just feel like more at peace and I just feel like I don't have this inner turmoil inside of me, like killing me, like that I have to find out like that it's all true, you know, cause I guess I've just kind of like let that go. Mm-hmm. And I told you that like, so the thing is when I was going through all this, like, you know, I did what I thought I was supposed to. Like I stayed away from anything that like websites or podcasts or anything that would be like considered like against the church, you know? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until like after we stopped going, you know, and like a few months later that like maybe that I started listening to some of that stuff. But honestly, like, I feel like some of that stuff has kind of like helped me because I didn't know that there was like people like me that doubted. And honestly, people at church don't talk about that they have doubts. So like, I just thought that maybe everybody like had these, you know, strong testimonies or like, I don't know, like I didn't know like anyone that was in my position. And so I think that, you know, now that I've kind of like found some of these podcasts and like listened to some people and I've listened to some things where like, where people have issues about church history, yet they still find like they still believe in the church or like come to church, you know, and they mm-hmm. still serve in the church and stuff. And honestly, like, I feel like I feel like I could find my place in the, you know, in the church that way, where it's like, there's so many good things about the church, but for some reason, like in my mind, at least like it all kind of came down to Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm at a place in my life now where it's like, I could just say like, you know, I don't care about church history anymore. It's just like, it is what it is. Yeah. But like, there's still like good things about church. And I think like I could come to church and I think I could like, you know, like I'm at a point in my life, I guess, where I could just kind of let that stuff go.
Yeah.
But I wasn't before, you know?
And when you say that, I'm thinking, and when you said it initially in our conversations off the recording here, as a leader and as a bishop, I ask myself, how can I have people that are struggling with this? How can I get them to that point before the resignation? Because I don't think, and I mean, you'd agree that the resignation didn't help you get there. It was just sort of part of that timeline.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It wasn't like, oh, I needed to resign so I could step back and look. But you said it was done sort of hastily.
Yeah.
And then you decompressed a little bit and were able to look back and think, you know what? You know, and you discovered others like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Bill Reel's podcast, through some of these others, and thought, wow, you know, other people are doing it. Other people, I'm not the only person in the world that have this concern.
Yeah.
And so what would you say to a bishop? Like how, I mean, if we could turn back time a little bit, like, is there anything that could have been done to help you have that decompression?
I don't know. Cause like I was in a bad spot. Like I was in like the darkest point of my life. I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, like,
these are the things I love to ponder over and think about, because this is such a crucial turning point.
Yeah.
Because though you're not a member on paper, you're being the truest to yourself than many members are, right? I think a lot of people get caught up in the culture of the church and they think, well, everybody goes to church. And but, you know, in their private lives, they're not reading the scriptures. They're not, you know, really focused there, but it fits into their day-to-day culture, right? And I don't mean to make a general statement about the membership of the church, but you recognized what you believed and where you're at, and you took a decision, and now maybe some of those decisions were more hastily.
Yeah. You know, And I'm just thinking about, you know, like a question, like maybe it would have been a good thing to be released from the bishopric. But then again, I mean, like there's such a stigma with that. I mean, it's like, oh, like what did he do? You know, but that's the thing. Like when I was, I don't know that there was anything that could have taken that pressure off.
Yeah.
Once it built up, you know, but I don't know. It's hard to,
Yeah.
You know, because honestly, like stepping away for you know, a few months, like I feel just better, you know, like, and I'm not.
And stepping away, you don't mean resigning. I don't want people to think like, you know, resigning helped because it helped me step away. But you've just, it's been a way that's forced you to step away.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, because, you know, like when you're struggling with doubts and you're in the bishopric, I mean, I don't know what other wards are like, but in the Lee ward, I mean, like you're getting called multiple times a week during the week to give blessings.
You're, to give rides.
Yeah, to give rides. Like there's just a lot of needs. And
we're in the inner city. It's there's a lot going on.
Yeah. And so like you're giving blessings, or you're like, you're going over to people's homes that are really struggling. And like, you're like, man, I'm struggling too, you know, but you're trying to like build them up and like help people. And it was just, that was difficult for me because I was, you know, like I didn't want to be inauthentic. I didn't want to like pretend. It was important to me to not pretend that like I was a strong believer if I wasn't. So,
you know, there's this book I haven't read it. It's above my pay grade, called Anti-Fragile. And it's this concept of being anti-fragile, you know, you have to tear your muscle in order to build muscle. Right.
Yeah.
And it all goes back to this balance where I feel like sometimes we try and be so strong, we try to be so convinced of the gospel that we got, kind of go down the path you do. I'm going to fast more. I'm going to pray more. I'm going to go to the temple more. And in reality, pushing that way rather than stepping back, actually, man, and I'm not trying to sound controversial.
Yeah.
I'm saying like, well, maybe you should just go out and tell people to stop coming to church, whatever. But how can we get, as leaders, how can we get members that are in this state to just step back and take a break for a minute? And that doesn't mean like you ask them, okay, we need you to not come to church for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But if I was to go back again, we're this is more of an analysis of me and my leadership style and how I approach it, because hopefully leaders listening can analyze this. But how can we approach these members that are going through this doubt and just saying, I just want you to stop praying about it for a minute. Give certitude a rest.
Yeah.
And just come to church. Like, do nothing else but just come to church, sit in the back, and just take it in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't try to be 100% home teacher. Don't try to go. If you don't want to go to the second hour, don't go to the second hour. If you don't want to go to the third hour, don't go to the third hour.
Yeah.
Just come to church, take in what you can, go home, and just love your family.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Because I mean, I was driving myself crazy and I was making myself incredibly depressed. Just trying to, you know, like I have to get the answer and I need it now, you know,
and you're pushing. Yeah. And then that thought came through your mind, well, maybe it isn't true.
Yeah.
And that was suddenly the easier path.
Yeah.
And that was the answer that was the only answer coming at that point. So I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I was not comfortable then at all with uncertainty.
Yeah.
But I really believed that, like,
man, that's such a powerful statement, Heath. Listen to that. Yeah. I was not comfortable with uncertainty.
Yeah.
And I think if members cannot say that, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Because, Heath, I promise you right now, I'm pretty certain I've had such remarkable experiences as a leader. And when I stand up in state conference and I bear my testimony, there's some statements of certitude there, of hyperbole.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean everybody's experience has to be that, or everybody's path to certitude needs to be there, nor is the goal certitude.
Yeah.
And I feel so much that we blind ourselves by thinking, I need to be able to stand up in sacrament meeting and say, I know. And then I get a star on my forehead and I sit down and I say, I'm one of you.
Yeah. Right?
And so going back to that, what was it? What was the statement that
I wasn't comfortable with uncertainty?
We have to be comfortable with uncertainty. Yeah. We have to be that. As leaders, we have to be uncomfortable with a gospel doctrine teacher that stands up that is uncertain about things. We have to be comfortable with a counselor in the bishopric that is uncertain about things.
Yeah. You know, I've told you, you know, one of the podcasts I listen to is Secular Buddhism. And the guy that does the podcast was actually like a AP in my mission in Ecuador.
Is he still a member of the church? Or?
He says he is. He put on a workshop here in Salt Lake, and I went to it like last December. It was amazing, and it brought so much peace to me. Like after the workshop, like I just for like a couple of days, I couldn't talk about anything else, you know, like with my wife. But one thing that I've learned from like the secular Buddhism is that like, you know, like what's important is like the here and the now, like this life, like, and you know, because I think I don't know anything about Buddhism, but like I've listened to this podcast and, you know, and I've tried to learn, and one of my clients is a Buddhist temple, and so I've spent hours and hours talking with my client, you know, about Buddhism and stuff. And one of the things that I've taken away from Buddhism, and you know, not that this is like their core teaching, but like to be okay, they're okay with uncertainty. Like they're not so worried about, like, at least from my point of view, like you know, having all the answers. It's just like you can't control what the truth is. You can't control what is after this life and what isn't after this life. You can't control any of it. So, you know, like kind of like, and that's okay. And like, you know, and like all you know is like this is what you have, and you know, kind of cherish the present moment and don't get yourself so worked up about like what's coming next. Yeah. And that really helped me, you know, just yeah, because I think that, you know, like yeah, it's about, you know, it's okay to not have all the answers.
Yeah. In the culture of the church, I feel like we sometimes almost brag about that certitude, right?
Yeah. Well, the one true church.
Right. And I'm not trying to make this controversial podcast. I am here to believe, I truly believe this is the one true church, but how do we define that? Yeah. And sometimes we define in a way that means nobody else's church is true at all. Right. Yeah. And so it's these statements as leaders is similar to the article I wrote about your without a shadow of a doubt testimonies hurting your leadership. And this is what I'm talking about is when we stand there and we talk with such conviction and certitude, those without conviction and certitude think that they've done something wrong and they haven't arrived. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but if we stand there and let the ward members know that we're okay with our own uncertainty, they'll be okay with their uncertainty and then they'll come back. Right. Yeah. And I would be foolish to say that I'm certain about every last principle of the gospel, every last part of history that's happened because I'm not, I'm not a scholar. I'm not an intellectual. I can't talk myself out of any question, but nonetheless, something is calling me to this church, to this gospel, to Joseph Smith and who he was. And, but sometimes that posture of the one true church sometimes hurts other individuals trying to arrive there. I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah, no, you are. You know, and I've told you, you know, like I haven't forgotten about like the spiritual experiences I had, you know, like in the church. Like my mission was amazing. Like it really was the best 2 years, you know, like you know, and there's so many good memories of the church and, you know, that I hold on to. Like you really do. Like you feel good going to church, you know, like I mean, there's a good feeling there for sure. And like they're good people. Like I love, you know, members of the church. And that's the thing, like I miss it, you know, like the times, you know, in the last few months where like I've really regretted like resigning is because like, you know, somebody that I really respect or, you know, like a peer, has like invited me to dinner, you know, and they're LDS and, you know, like, it's just, they don't, you know, nobody knows I resigned cause it's not like, I just don't talk about it, you know, right. And I'm not trying to hide it, but, you know, like I've gone to dinner with people I really respect and they're, you know, leaders in their wards and stakes and stuff. And I just like, man, like, you know, I regret, or I don't know. It's like, I'm not trying to hide the fact that I resigned and I would totally openly tell them that I resigned if they asked me, you know, like, oh, what's your calling now? You know, like I would not try to hide it at all, but like, I'm just kind of secretly hoping it doesn't come up because I think like if they found out, like their opinion of me would change and like I'd lose that relationship. And I miss those relationships, you know, and like I miss coming to church and I miss being with people and having that connection.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I remember during one of our lunches, he said something that really stood out to me is, you know, as you've sort of gotten to a better place and you've been struggling still with some of these historical facts that still bother you and things, but you've kind of discovered other people have put them aside and are still believing. And
Yeah.
And you said to me, what if, well, what if it's just a, what if it really is just about Christ?
Yeah.
And when you said that, kind of stopped you and I said, Heath, it is just about Christ, you know, and sure. I mean, the Lord has its, his pattern through prophets. And by saying that, it doesn't diminish Joseph Smith's role or Brigham Young's role or, but it truly is about Christ.
Yeah.
And, his grace and that I'm no further along the path than you are.
Yeah.
Though on paper I have some ordinances and those ordinances are helping me progress, but we're all in this together. We're all learning in our different paths. And you know, I think right now some of these decisions you've made, they've been done in haste, but I think we can always go back to like Christ is still there and his atonement still works for you.
Yeah.
You know, you always have that option of coming back and returning to the church, right?
Yeah. I told you when we were out to lunch, like that, like I'd read this story of somebody that had resigned and came back and it was like 2.5 year process or something. And I was just like, oh man, like I didn't know like that's what it was. And I don't
know. You expect it to be shorter or longer or what?
I thought like when I was ready to come back, I'd just come talk to you or, you know, like my bishop, be like, all right. You know,
let's
like,
do this. Yeah. Build the font.
They're like, okay, like, yep, yeah, you're ready to go. Let's baptize you. But it's not like, I mean, I honestly, like all I did, I read one person's story and I don't know if it's, you know, really how it is or if it's changed or whatnot. But from what I understand, like it takes like a year. Yeah. You got to come to church for like a year and like keep all the commandments and everything. And then like, you know, confessed all your sins while you resigned and everything. And then after a year you can get rebaptized. And then after another year, you can get like your temple.
The temple blessings restored.
Yeah. And I think it, you know, what I read was it involves some letters to like, you know, church headquarters and like the first presidency, you know, of all your sins and stuff. And they make a determination whether you can come back. And that's pretty serious, you know, like, I don't know. I didn't know that that's what it was.
Yeah. And when you said that to me, I'm so happy you're thinking about it. And again, not that you're, you know, thinking about it every day or whatever, but
yeah,
you know, it's an option, man. And like we talked about at our lunches that, man, you're always welcome here, you know, I don't think anybody, especially our ward, it turns over every 6 months. So nobody really knows either of us anymore, but, man, I hope you do just come and gain and just be that person that sit there and absorb what comes and don't worry about the stress of the pressure.
Yeah.
Of being that perfect member, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. And it's already been mentioned, but like really like it sticks out in my mind. Like, you know, there's a person that has a blog, you know, and they said that, you know, really they don't care about church history. Like they care about the good parts of the church. And like, I really feel like, like after hearing that, and of course I just recently heard that, you know, like I'm already resigned, but I was like, huh, like I could do that now. You know, I could be that Mormon. But then I think like, man, like a few years ago, like if I don't know, like, you know, like if I came back to church, I might be like the type of Mormon I would have hated a couple years ago, you know, but I don't know.
But that's okay. Right? I mean, because that's the thing, like we've got to be okay with those Mormons. Like there's not a Mormon that nobody has fit box to come to church. They just, anybody's welcome here. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, like when people have like certain like attitudes or things like, you know, like that problems with the church, you know, people are like, well, go find another church. That was my attitude a couple years ago, but I would have a different attitude now, you know, like I think it's good to like invite people to have different perspectives and that's okay, you know, because, but I don't know. I don't have any of the answers.
Okay, my last question's a tough one.
Yeah.
Will you just share with us like, your testimony, like where it's at, you can say whatever you want, even if it's something I would disagree with.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I still pray. I can't not pray, you know? And I pray, like somebody's listening, even though now I'm not sure somebody is or not, you know? And that's the thing. Like I hope there's a God and I hope he loves us. I hope that families, you know, are forever. I hope that there's something after this life. Like I really want there to be, but I just don't know anymore. But I've come to a point where I'm okay. Like I'm okay not knowing. Like I love my family. I love my job. You know, like I really care about being a good person. if, you know, and like raising my kids to like be good people and to just love others. And so, I don't know, it's pretty weak, but, I hope God exists. I hope, you know, Christ is there. I hope he's listening to my prayers. And I hope I can be like, you know, with my friends and family after this life. I really want that to be true.
That concludes my interview with Heath Becker. I hope many of you that have sat here and listened to this episode have thought of an individual in your ward, or maybe the counselors in your presidency, or maybe you've been inspired to reassess your perspective on individuals who you think have the strongest testimony of certitude. And just to conclude this episode, I just want to expound a little bit on what I've learned through my relationship with Heath. And as you can listen, I'm encouraged by how he talks about things. I'm encouraged that he's actually interested in the process of what it takes to become again a member of the Church of Jesus Christ. And I hope in the future there can be a second part to this episode talking about his return. And if he doesn't, you know, I'll still love Heath and his family always. And it's obvious that, you know, membership in the church is not what defines love for anybody. And I think most members of the church would feel the same way. But consider this quest for certitude that we encourage in the church. And it's a good quest. I feel like I've gone through my own version of that quest for certitude. And I've had remarkable experiences. I've had spiritual experiences. I've stood at the lecterns of the church and testified in my own way about things that I feel pretty certain about. Now, I've never seen an angel. I've never heard a voice from heaven tell me these things, but I have had experiences that in my own way testify to my heart that Joseph Smith was in fact a prophet, and that what he did and translated was the word of God. I'm aware of the sticky history, the messy facts, that for some make that more difficult to believe even when they've had a spiritual witness of in some form, in some way, whether strong or weak. And I don't think anybody, any leader in the church, as they stand and testify boldly, are meaning to diminish others, when in fact, those words of power sometimes build up others and testify to others. And for me personally, I've sort of just discovered through this relationship with Heath, this paradox that happens with a bold testimony. It can build some, but at the same time, alienate others. And in no way am I calling that across the board we water down testimonies so that they don't alienate anybody. I think they definitely do more good than bad. And it's not about testimony per se, but it's about being aware of individuals who hear those testimonies and crave to own one themselves, that crave the certitude that people like myself experience. And I'd be foolish to say that I'm 100% certain, but boy, am I certainly convinced. So consider the individuals that are doubting in your ward or in your group. Consider the relationship you have with them. And when they're begging from their knees for a spiritual witness above all other witnesses that will convince their heart that of the truthfulness of this gospel, and for some reason it hasn't come in the way that they've thought. Maybe it has come, but not in the way that they expected. And so they're not ready to accept maybe those messages, those spiritual witnesses that come. Or maybe it hasn't come yet for some reason. How can we help them just step back for a minute and give their quest for certitude a break? Because that very quest for certitude is what is leading them to uncertainty. This is the great paradox of leadership, is to encourage and challenge and push to become greater and become more and to accomplish things above our capacity, but at the same time, not diminishing them and discouraging them and giving them more and more examples of why they don't measure up. I don't have the answer to that, and I don't think this episode was meant to give that answer, but maybe spend some time pondering over how can we encourage individuals to try the quest for certainty without discouraging them and putting too much stress on them to get there today. I'd love your feedback. I'd love your thoughts and perspectives that you've had during this interview. I know I've been blessed by my relationship with Heath and his family and understanding what they're going through. And I hope now that you've heard his story, you've been blessed as well. I hope that this episode has been an example of maybe a difference that we're making with leading LDS. Obviously, there's other ways to make differences. There's other ways to build the kingdom. But this has just been the way that I've felt most inspired to contribute to the world, to the church. And some days are more discouraging than others, but I can't do this without your help. And so all we ask at Leading LDS is $1 a month that will provide resources, free up some time so that myself and the team can do more episodes like this one. And I hate sounding like a telethon at the end of every episode, but I truly challenge you to consider today to go to leadinglds.org/help, H-E-L-P, and contributing $1 a month. And if you don't want to, at least email me and tell me how we can increase the quality of content, the quality of resource, the Leading LDS, so that you do feel confident and don't lose any sleep over contributing that $1 a month. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.